What up, people? It's your boy Justin Ramos here with a brand new episode of Just the Kid from Brooklyn, East New York in the building. And we got a very special guest, my man Corey fucking Fernandez. At least that's what it says on the Instagram, the Twitter, and the Facebook. What's up, Corey? Welcome back to New York. You moved back, man. What's up?
Yes, that's Corey with no E and fucking with no G. Corey fucking Fernandez. I'm here. I'm in the fucking building back in NYC after a five-year stint in L.A. They shut L.A. down, and I just brought my ass back to the East Coast after all the fucking comedy clubs shut down over there.
He's like, I'm coming home. I'm coming home.
Yeah, I was like, I'm paying expensive ass rent over here, and I can't even do shit. Ain't no auditions. Ain't no shows. I was like, let me get my ass out of here.
What when did you come back?
I got back in January. So Martin Luther King Day was actually the day I flew in.
Wait, yeah. Of 2020 or of this year?
Of this year.
Oh, okay. Oh, so you just came back. Okay.
Yeah.
How you like how Brooklyn looks now?
Well, you know, I think can appreciate about Canarsie is that it's still outside of the reaches of gentrification.
Nah, it's coming.
It's still, you know, like it's still hood. It's still the old Brooklyn. It's about as old Brooklyn as you're gonna get because every place else now is different. But you're right. It is coming because you already see what they did with what is it? What's that park over there by Seaview? It's Gateway Mall.
Oh, yes, the new park.
What's her name? It's named Chisholm. Shirley Chisholm Park.
Yep. We got all the beautiful artwork. Well, you know, I'm from East New York, and I still haven't been to that park yet. When it gets warm,
it's really nice. Yeah, it's really nice, and you can tell already that how much that side is developing. You know, it started with the Gateway Mall, and now you all these like apartment buildings popping up and developments popping up around that. Then they got the Shirley Chisholm Park. So white lady with dogs is definitely on their way.
Yeah, for sure. definitely on their way. Yo.
The white women with the dogs are on their way.
Listen, my mom on the block I grew up on, my mom has a white neighbor right next door to her. And she asked me one time when I was over there, she's like, is this a safe block? I was like, yeah, this block is safe. But once you get on New Lats in New Jersey, it's fair game. What do you mean?
Right.
What do I mean? You think the speed bump is makes the block safe? Is that what you think? This is East New York, miss. You moved here. You better learn.
Right.
Once it hits summertime, it's chitty, chitty, bang, bang. Okay.
Right, exactly.
Crazy, man.
You know that shit is about to change when you see Starbucks pop up.
Of course. I mean, we got the fake one in the Target at Gateway, but that's as close as we get for right now. Yeah, man. So,
but go ahead.
What have you been up to since you've been back?
I taped the show on there's this new thing, it's called Urban Flicks. It's like a diversified Netflix. So it's like a lot of like diverse programming on there, just picture like a Netflix but without white people.
So
it's called Urban Flicks. On there they have a show called Laugh Tonight with Damon Williams. I don't know if you know Damon Williams from Chicago.
I know who he is. Yeah, I haven't met him yet, but I know who he is. I've seen him on television.
So Damon is the host, and it's dope, man. It's like on some.
It's on some what? You cut out for a second. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. We cannot hear the Corey Fernandez. Corey Fernandez, are you there on the line?
Can you hear me?
I got you now. Yep. Go ahead. Okay. You said it's what?
So what's the last thing you heard?
You were talking about Damon Williams being on a show. Is he the host of this show?
Yeah, so he's the host. It's called Laugh Tonight with Damon Williams.
Yes.
And it's dope, man. It's a stand-up show. He comes out, he does a few minutes, and then he brings out three comics, and then you get to do like 15 minutes.
Okay.
Which is pretty good for considering, you know, because a lot of TV sets, you could only do like 7 or 8 minutes, you know what I mean?
Right.
So, yeah, so I did that. A lot of funny motherfuckers was on it. Leonard Oots. I was on the show. Yeah, I was on the show with Leonard Oots. Kevin Tate. I don't know if you know Kevin Tate.
I do. He's good friends with one of my mentors. So yeah, I met him. Oh man, like 3-4 years ago, because he's come to New York a couple times.
Yeah. Exactly. So I did it with them. So they had some real fire acts on the show. It's dope, man. So yeah, look out for that. Laugh Tonight with Damon Williams, and then I also did a movie with Rob Stapleton. Rob Stapleton wrote this movie called The Stuff.
Yes,
it's got it's got mad heads in it. Mad heads is involved. It's got a star-studded lineup. It was dope to be a part of that. And I play like the bad guy on that, of course.
Again.
But it's dope, man. It's like a dramedy. So it's like action and comedy in one. So it's dope. It's a dope movie. We went to the premiere. We had a good time at the premiere. You could catch that. That's going to be on Amazon Prime.
Yes. Yep. I got the email for it, and I'm like, why are they sending me something with Rob's face in it? And I was like, oh yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird sometimes when you see stuff with the people you know, and you're like, why are they sending me this? And then I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. He was working on
it. Mm-hmm.
Like, I know this guy. Yo, so okay, so when did you start comedy anyway? What year?
I started in 2003. I was 22 years old. I was going to Kingsborough Community College. And the first
I went
time
there.
I think we all did.
We all ended up there.
That was like the 13th grade of whatever high school you went to, because everybody
exactly.
else was there.
Exactly. Yep. You got
and then,
it right.
But Kingsborough was dope, man. They got the campus right there on the beach. You know, I had some good memories at that school.
So they
did a talent show, and that was my first time getting on stage, man. I had been writing a year prior to that. At 21, I decided that I wanted to do stand-up. I called the first guy that I told that to was A.G. White, because he used to do the movie theater at Linden Movie Theater with Ray DeJean. So I used to go there all the time, and I used to watch those shows, and I just soaked it in, man. I just soaked it in, and I was like, man, I want to do this so bad, but I don't know how to get into this.
Yeah, and, he was just there under the learning tree.
Yep, and that show, I'll never forget that show, man. That show had Jason Andors and Angelo Lozada, rest in peace.
Wow, yeah, Angelo, RIP, man. Good dude, man.
Yeah, and so after that show, I approached AG, and I was like, man, I really want to do this. How do I do this? How do I get into this? And he said, look, I'll tell you what. Go home, put together your funniest 5 minutes, and then come back and see me. And it took like about 8 months for me to. eight months later was the Kingsborough talent show. I never went back to AG, right? But I did have my shit ready because I was writing it.
And right.
That was the first time I tried it was at the talent show at Kingsborough. Yeah, I was 22 years old, 2003, man. So that was May 23rd. I'll never forget May 23rd, 2003. So this upcoming May, I'm gonna be 18 years in the game.
Wow.
Yeah,
that is crazy.
The first time I got on stage was a talent show, but the first actual room that I did was
where
Footprints and Darnell Rawlins used to host it.
Was that when Rashid had it?
Darnell Rawlins.
Darnell. Oh yes. Okay.
Yeah, he was the first comedian to put me on stage. Rashid was the first comedian to put money in my pocket at BBQ's over there by Green Acres Mall.
Okay. Oh, way out there by the Walmart.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Okay. I know.
That room was so fucking rough. Have you ever done that room?
No. I wasn't around back then.
There were two BBQs. There was a BBQ's in the Bronx that Capone used to host. And then there was a BBQ's over there by, what is the name of that fucking neighborhood? By Green Acres Mall.
Is it like, don't they call it Valley Stream?
Valley Stream. So yeah, so it had the Valley Stream one, and then you had the Bronx one with Capone. Both of them shits was rough as hell, bro. Like I took some L's in those rooms, yo.
Yo, I understand, man. Listen, yo, Footprints, yo, always to me was like, that's kryptonite, man. It didn't matter who you were either. Well, mm-hmm. You know, credits didn't matter there. They didn't care. They'd be like, yo, him not funny. And they just right. Doing their own thing. Like, it was just crazy. You know,
yeah, so imagine Footprints is the hardest room in Brooklyn, and that's the
absolutely that right.
My first room doing with that.
Right, right, and then you okay? So, and do you used to do the Laugh Lounge, right?
I used to do the Laugh Lounge. R.I.P. to the Laugh Lounge, man. I missed that.
Yeah.
That a lot of great stories, a lot of great nights, a lot of great memories. Mm-hmm. I miss Delilah. Bless her heart. She fucking gave us a stage and a mic to perform. She gave us a dope ass spot to be at, man. She gave right. us a home. She gave a lot of us a home.
Yeah. Yep. Because you know they did the what was it? Hard Knocks, right? The Hard Knocks comedy show.
Yep. Burt's Move.
Burt's Move. Yeah.
Burt's Move. I miss the Laugh Lounge, and it has such a great name, man. The Laugh Lounge.
It really did.
That's a dope ass name for a comedy club. I love the way it was set up. You got the upstairs, you hanging out upstairs, then you go downstairs into the showroom. Like I miss
it was dope.
I really do.
Yeah, I miss that club, man. And now it's nothing. After they closed, it became a Mexican restaurant, and then now it's just empty.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm surprised that it closed because it was in such a dope location. Like, that area over there, Essex and Delancey, like, it's mad shit over there to hang out and have fun and do stuff.
Yep. Very, 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 very popping, especially on the weekend. Forget about it.
Yeah. Yeah. It was in a dope spot. Like, I just, it's sad that it went under, but it had a 10 year run. It had a good 10 year run.
Yeah, man. It did. So, okay. So, let me ask you this. Because you have quite a few TV appearances. What was first? Was it Who Got Jokes, Comic View, Def Comedy Jam?
Yeah, it was this show called Coming to the Stage on BET.
I remember that show.
Yeah, season one, Lil JJ, the little kid, won.
Yeah.
It was so funny, man, because you had these grown-ass men, grown-ass comedians that have been running around for years losing to this little kid. They hated that motherfucker. And he made it all the way to the end and won the whole thing. That year, Mark Curry was the host. Kim Coles was the resident judge. And then they brought it back for season two where Bruce was the host. And then Kim Coles still remained the resident judge. And that's when my whole story started, man. I auditioned for that, and I auditioned for season one. I never made the cut for season one, but when season two came around, I just started. Like I was like probably weeks in, like so fresh and
wow.
So by the time season two came around, I had a year under my belt running around, and I was ready this time. And I'll never forget, man. I'll never forget, Angela Yee came with me to the audition because Angela Yee, this is before she got on radio and all that. She was shooting a documentary about comedians. Yeah, she wanted a veteran, and she wanted a female, which was Leanne Lord. You know Leanne Lord?
Yes, I do.
Yeah, she wanted a veteran, she wanted a female, and she wanted a new comic. So the female was Leanne. The veteran was Todd Lynn. And then I was the new comic. So she came with me. She came with me to the audition. It was with John Laster. Her and John Laster was recording this documentary. And we met up at the audition. And they picked me, man. They picked me. And I ended up going to California. It was my first time in Los Angeles. I went with Wasan Jackson. Me and Jackson got a room together because they picked him too. And man, won't you know, man, after a year doing comedy, I almost won that whole shit. I came in second place.
Wow.
I lost to a 17-year veteran named Joe Recca from like the DMV area, DC, Maryland, Virginia area. And then, wow. So he came in first. I came in second. Guess who came in third?
Who came in third?
Lil Duval. Lil Duval. It was me, Joe Rekha, and Lil Duval in the finals.
Living my best life.
and
wow,
and,
that's crazy.
Yep. And that was crazy. The first time I met Marlon Randolph. I met so many people because it was a pool of us, you know, competing with each other.
You met Mr. Staff meeting. Oh, shit. Oh, man. My nigga Dory Fernandez out there. Let's go with you, man.
Exactly. And
that's my guy, man.
Yeah, so after that, they put us on a coming to the stage tour. So imagine, bro, I'm 1 year into comedy, I'm already on national television, and I'm already touring after a year.
That's crazy, man. So it's like everything was just boom, 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 boom.
Yep.
That's crazy. And then from there you got Laugh-A-Palooza on Comedy Central, I see. Hello?
My bad. I'm sorry, Justin. I've been talking to somebody here. My bad. One more time. Say that again.
I said, and then, so after Who's Got Jokes and on touring and all that, you was able to land Laugh-A-Palooza on Comedy Central.
Yep, I did come into the stage. The next one was Who's Got Jokes.
Right.
And then after Who's Got Jokes was Laugh-A-Palooza with Jamie Foxx. This was the first year that Jamie didn't host it because he just won the Oscar from Ray.
Okay, and then they had Anthony Anderson come in his place.
Right, and then Anthony Anderson came in and hosted it. And man, when I tell you,
Laugh-A-Palooza,
oh, first of all, it was a comedy festival. So imagine that, like something like
Montreal
and all that, Aspen, like it was something like that, but a black one. And it was in Atlanta.
Wow.
And they had like seven to venues, and each night you were running back and forth from venue to venue, and it was all packed, and there was nothing but industry there. And
that is crazy.
And it was fun. So imagine you a new comic. I was there with Omar Thompson.
My man.
Yeah, you're a new comic and you're in Atlanta for the first time. Jamie Foxx is doing this thing. Anthony Anderson's there. All these celebrities are there. And you're running around from room to room, bar to bar, you know, getting on stage and meeting other people. Like, it was dope, man. It was fucking dope.
That is crazy, man. Okay. And then also, too, in the same year, you like, this is crazy, bro. The same year, you were in the NBC Stand Up for Diversity. Right?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That was when they
first started it. And you were a finalist.
Yep. Yeah, that was when they first started it. Now NBC does this talent search where they're looking for diverse comics, and it's huge now, and it's a big deal now.
Yeah, it is.
When I did it, it was in its second year. I did the first year. Wow. I didn't make it to the finals. Will Silvins ended up winning that year. And and he created this NBC Shortcuts thing off of that. And now there's a film festival off of what he created from the NBC diversity thing.
And that's crazy.
Yep. And then the second year I did it, I was in there with a lot of heavy hitters, man. Lil Rel was in my group. Eric Andre was in my group. Khalees Hawkins was there. Naeem Lynn was there.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, you had some hitters in that one.
Mm-hmm.
You had some hitters, and that's not. I've done it twice. I know, you know, as of last year, I think they did it digitally. So, but I'm gonna look out for it this year so I could, you know, do it for a third time or whatever. But I've had fun doing it because it's just waiting online and being out there. Oh, actually, the first year I went and I waited like pretty much for hours. And then the second time I did it, I got a call. I went on the second day of the auditions, and a friend of mine, Asia Bennett, she was like, yo, there's nobody here, come now. So me and Dave Lester got on the train and we walked right in, and everybody was mad because they had been out there all night. And it was like, yo, this is bullshit. They just walked right in and signed up. Yep. So it's a good time because you're there with your comrades, you know, we all family, so we sharing war stories and stuff.
Yeah,
I'm definitely looking forward to it again. And then
I remember that later, those days camping out on the sidewalk.
Yeah. right. It's dope. But then like 3 years later, you become the first Puerto Rican comic to do Def Comedy Jam. Like, how did that feel?
That was a dream come true, man. It was my first time on HBO. It was my first time really doing like a mainstream show, you know, like everything else was BET, TV One, you know. Actually, Laugh-A-Palooza was Comedy Central. So that was the first time me doing mainstream. But, you know, HBO is another level. You know what I mean? Like,
Yes. It's the pinnacle, man.
Man,
Man,
it was so much fun, man. They put two stacks in your pocket. They fly you out. Wow. They put you in a fucking 5-star hotel. And it was dope, man. Bob Sumner was holding auditions. I went to the audition, a room in Jersey. And I killed it. I murdered it. And he put me on the show. Mm-hmm. Him and Stan Lathan, you know, Sanaa Lathan's dad.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Legendary.
Yeah.
Legendary.
Yeah. He directed all of Chappelle's specials. He goes back since Sesame Street. Like, he's done everything. His resume is so long.
Yes, he does. Yes. Mm-hmm. Absolutely true, man. That's dope, though, man. Yo, Def Comedy Jam, man. I'm a fan of, like, Def Comedy Jam. I know they got the all Def Digital now, but I like the old school Def Comedy Jam. You know, God bless, good night. That's what I like.
Yeah.
And I know when they brought it back when you were on it, it was different, but it still was good. It still, to me, had the same feel. Mm-hmm. It was just in the 2000s.
Right. Right. Yeah. Ain't nothing going to replace when Martin used to host it, but.
No. No, yeah, never.
But it was still dope, man. It was still dope. Everybody came out. The after party was sick. Every celebrity, I'm chilling with Snoop and Sanaa Lathan's there. Wow. And like, it was off the chain, man. Smokey was there. We or Gerald Kelly, who else I take with Tiffany Haddish.
Dope.
Yeah, it was a dream come true, bro. It was a dream come true. Yeah, I mean, you know, when you grow up and you watch this stuff on television, you would never imagine actually being in the mix and being a part of it and meeting these people when you get older, you know?
Right.
So right. It was just dope, man. And of course, Russell was there, you know. And I had a blast, man. I would say that was probably one of the pinnacles of my career.
Yeah, man. I mean, and then, you know, I know you went back and did like a couple years later, you went back, did Coming to the Stage and, which was what the, that was. And then it says, Coming to the Stage, was that, did they bring it back or was it that they were trying to do something else with it? Like,
Coming to the Stage was the first TV appearance that I did, with the one with Lil Duval, and you know, that was the first one.
Okay.
After that season two, they never brought it back. That was it.
Nope,
they never brought it back.
Well, someone needs to fix your IMDb. All right, we'll fast forward. because I see that you did Comic View One Night Stand with Kevin Hart. Like, how was that? That's crazy.
That was dope.
Like this is Kevin Hart before he's what we know now, you know?
Yeah.
Like this is when he's on his rise.
Yeah, like they were trying to find a host for this show. They were auditioning some more. They was auditioning a bunch of people. They were gonna go with some more. And I guess at the last minute they picked Kevin. But it just goes to show you that, like you said, with the level that Kevin Hart was at the time, because now it wouldn't even be a question if you could get him as a host or not. You know what I mean? Like now, they wouldn't even be auditioning anyone else if you could have him as a host. You know what I'm saying? But at that time, right, he wasn't at that level yet. So, you know, they were still trying to figure out who's going to be the next guy. And they finally picked him. How did I end up getting that show? I think it was another audition. Oh, no. The people from the producers of Coming to the Stage were also a part of this show. So they called me back and said, hey, Corey, we got a new show coming out that we want you to try out for.
Okay.
And it was dope, man. They taped it in L.A. I flew to L.A. This was like BET trying to step up their game from Comic View. You know, like,
okay,
they didn't want it to be another Comic View. They wanted to be better than Comic View. So They gave you more money. They put you in a nice hotel. They had the limousine pick you up and bring you to the taping, and then you step out of the limousine. They had the helicopter flying over the building. Like, it was crazy. And
that's nuts, man.
Yeah. And so and it was dope, man. I got to work with Kev, you know. I've known Kev a long time because, coincidentally, the first episode that I ever did on Coming to the Stage, it was Kim Coles, and he was the other judge, and then Paul Mooney was the other judge.
Wow. That, yo, listen, Paul Mooney, man. That I love Richard Pryor, right? But when I found out that Paul Mooney was the mastermind behind a lot of Pryor stuff, like I had to find out who he was, like when I was younger, before I started comedy and stuff, and I just like started digging. Yo, Paul Mooney to me is like one of the greatest, man. Like, dope, man. Crazy.
Yeah, people don't know how much he's contributed.
Right. Right, man. I know everybody's coming after him now, you know, because of, you know, Richard Jr., you know, making his statements and stuff like that. But, you know, listen, I don't get it with the personal, you know what I mean? I don't agree with the personal stuff that went on. But on an entertainment level, like, I respect this man. You know, same with Bill Cosby. You know, I know he's in his thing and whatever, right? But like the art that he put out, man, him and Paul Mooney, like I rock with them, you know, on an art level, on an entertainment level, on a comedic level. So, you know, I learned to separate, you know, what they do in their personal is their thing. And I don't judge, you know, might not agree with it, but on a stand up level, man, crazy.
Yeah. What do you think about what they were saying about him touching Richard's son?
I haven't read Richard Pryor's book. I think it's Becoming Richard Pryor. I need to find it, actually. I think it's out of print, but I'll find it. I got my ways of finding books that I want to read. But I heard, I don't know for sure because I haven't read the book, that there is something in there where they say that Paul used to take advantage of Richard.
Of Richard Jr.
And because, you know, Richard was freebasing back then and getting high, and he would make him do, you know, things, mm-hmm. right, in order to get the drugs. So I wasn't there, so I don't know if Richard Pryor Jr. is lying, but I wouldn't say that he isn't lying because I don't really know, but I could kind of see where he might be telling the truth, but we don't know. We weren't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, I don't think.
It's just a sticky situation.
Yeah, I don't think a grown heterosexual male is going to make up no shit like that.
Right, and that's the thing. Like, you know, in this time, you know, like I remember when Me Too hit and it first started coming out. You know what I'm saying? And I remember I did a show, I did a podcast, and a friend of mine asked me, you know, do you think we should believe these women? I said, absolutely. Until they're proven wrong, we should believe them. Because we're in the world, you know, we're men. We know what goes down. We do it sometimes and not even thinking about what we're doing. The way we look at women, the way we might say something slick. Yeah, oh, you looking good. Oh, man, the cheeks looking right. We never know. It happens in corporate world. It happens in entertainment. I've seen it in entertainment all the time. So we don't know. And I remember my friend was like, but how can you say that? I said, don't you have a daughter? Do you have a sister, an aunt, a grandmother, a mom, somebody?
Right.
That's really a cousin.
Right.
Think about that. And he switched the subject. He started talking about basketball. And I was in my head like, then don't ask me about it, bro. You know what I'm saying? And the same thing goes for men. There's, you know, men that, you know, look at the, you know, I don't get too political, but look at the Catholic Church as an example. You know what I'm saying? Altar boys from priests. You know what I'm saying? So it's different things. It goes on both sides of the ball. So it's not just happening to males or females or, you know, whatever new genre we have nowadays, right? We keeping it PC. I really don't care about that. But I'm just saying, I love everybody in this world. This podcast loves everybody. Just the kids in Brooklyn. No, but, like, you know, it's hard, man. Even like, the R. Kelly situation. Like, you can never, you know, we can never cancel him. You know why? Because he wrote everything. Mm-hmm. Even if he's not singing it, he wrote for everybody. Everybody. Mm-hmm. It would be really hard to pull top 40 from the past, present, and what he might write in the future if he ever gets out of jail or if he's out, whatever, mm-hmm. right? It would be hard to cancel him.
Right.
I don't listen to his music, but I'm just like, yo, like, how do you know what I'm saying? How can you cancel something like that? It's the same thing, like, you know, I've heard things about Bill, right? I remember Bill Cosby. I remember when I was a kid and he got in trouble in the 90s when that lady came out. And that was right before he was about to buy NBC's network, right? And he would have been the only black man to be part of the Big Five. You know what the Big Five is? It's CBS, NBC, Fox. Well, now NBC is NBC Universal, Verizon, and Disney. Time Warner is trying to get into that, but that's a whole, like, they're like the sixth man. You know what I'm saying? So imagine Bill Cosby back then, right, in the 90s, would have became an owner of one of the Big Five. So, you know, a lot of people like Dick Gregory was like, oh, well, you know, that's why they came after him. Could be true, but, you know, there's been rumblings that he's always been doing the types of stuff he was doing. You know what I'm saying? Like, I know comics personally that have worked with him. It's like, yo, you know, he was doing stuff like that. He'll set you up with a shorty in the, you know what right. I mean? At the hotel. So it's like, it's no. Do I think it was that amount of people? I don't know. I wasn't there. It could have been more, could have been less. Who knows? People could have got paid off. We don't know. It's the same thing like Michael Jackson, right? They did the Finding Neverland, or whatever it was called.
Neverland, yeah.
On HBO. And what did we find out? That all of those motherfuckers were lying. Which is why HBO temporarily pulled it from their station for a little while. And Oprah pulled down the after show that she was doing on YouTube because she was getting a lot of backlash. It's like, why are you coming at Michael? You know what I'm saying? Like, even when they used to say it back then, it was never proven. And then it came out years later that those kids as adults were paid to say that because their parents wanted money. It's crazy. Like, why are you attacking Michael Jackson? Like, you know what I mean? Like, we all know Michael was weird, but it was never, like, Macaulay Culkin came forward and was like, nah, you know what I mean? Nothing ever happened. Emmanuel Lewis, the Coreys, right? Which one was it? Feldman or Corey Ham? I think it was Corey Feldman.
Yeah, Feldman,
right?
Yeah.
Famous. You know what I'm saying? Very famous, right? He talked about Weinstein, but when they asked him about Michael, he was like, Michael, you crazy? No, never. We hung out all the time, and it was just chill. We all know that Michael Jackson was a grown kid, right? He never grew up because he never had a childhood. He was famous from a little child. He never had a childhood. Do I think it was a little weird that he was having sleepovers with other people's kids? Absolutely. Do I think it was weird he was going to their house and doing that shit too? Yeah. And giving them beer or wine coolers? That's weird. It is. It's inappropriate. But Michael, it's never been proven that Michael's done anything. So it just is weird shit like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you don't.
But what do you feel about stuff like that? Well, what do you think? Can you separate it? Can you separate the controversy from the person's art?
I can, man. To this day, I still bump R. Kelly. You know, I still bump Michael and everybody else. But the documentary made me question Michael. You know, like, it made me question, like, well, all right, like, one of the things, like, for instance, like, all right, let's say, like, we give him a pass because he's Michael, right? But mm-hmm. Let's say, like, if a guy is like, you know, my name is Bubba, and I didn't have a childhood because my childhood was robbed from me, so now to make up for it, I let little boys sleep in my bed, like. I don't think we would accept that from anyone else, but we accept it from him because he's Michael. So, you know, I do think that we give him a pass because I don't know why I would want a child to sleep in my bed, somebody else's child. think of it in those terms. Like, if it was anyone else doing that, would you see that appropriate with anyone else? You know, like, if it was your child and some random person that wants to sleep with your child in bed.
No, absolutely not. It's not appropriate whether the person is a celebrity, someone you know, a family member. Yeah. Neighbor down the street. It's just not appropriate.
But I do think that, you know, there's also an incentive to make up a story like that to try to get some money. I could see that happening as well, you know.
Yeah, of course. Definitely. I mean, you know, that's happened with a lot of celebrities and athletes over the years and just different situations on people in political power positions, you know, media people. We saw it came down like wildfire after Bill Cosby. Yeah. They was going.
Yeah, that's where the whole Me Too thing started. Yeah.
And they was digging too. They were digging and deep, going way back, which is crazy to me because there's a statute of limitations on things. But It didn't matter because that was the hot thing at the moment. We gonna dig back into 85 and dig into the 90s. Like, yo, what are you doing that for? You know, the person they come forward now, they coming forward, and it just was the trend. So, you know, and to put Bill, who can't even see, in jail, it's actually kind of sad. Like, you know, during the height of COVID, he stopped taking showers because he's afraid of getting germs from the inmates. That's sad. That's very sad. It really is. Like, but you know, he did the crimes. So we got to do the time. But I think they should put him in one of them country club things where he could do what he wants to do and wash, you know, freely without, you know what I mean? Put him in like one of them country club dorm type situation jails with minimal security. Because where the fuck is he running? He can't see. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's ridiculous. You know, I'm not defending Bill, but you got to remember, these people are human too at the end of the day. You can't, you know, treat people like they're animals. You know what I'm saying? Like, animals have more rights than people, which is crazy. So, in certain cases, we won't talk about that. But if you're black and brown, you know what I mean.
No, it's true. It's true. It's sad. It's sad, but it's true.
So, yeah, it's great. So, so how did you get into acting? Because I know you. I remember seeing you in Cop Out. With Bruce Willis, Tracy Morgan. Ain't nobody gonna kick me in the nuts. Anyway, listen, it's crazy, right? I see you in this room, and then fast forward to 13, I met you at Uber Lounge, and it's weird. I'm like, I'm on stage with this motherfucker, like, from Cop Out. It's crazy. So how did you get that role? Like, did you audition? You have an agent for that? Like,
yeah, I've been auditioning way before I got that movie. It's so many things I tried out for, Justin, that I never got, that, you know, that no one ever knows about. I think Kyle Grooms?
Yes, I do. He's the cousin of Q Brooks.
And Kyle Grooms was, I think, the first comedian to tell me, start taking acting classes. He was like, start taking acting class. Yeah. I was like, okay, where do I go? Who do I go to? And then he gave me his acting coach, Joanna Bexson. Shout out to her, who's worked with everyone from Chappelle to Kevin Hart. Like, she's worked with everybody. And I started taking acting classes. And in the beginning, I wasn't passionate about acting. At the time, I just wanted to be the funniest comedian that I could be. I really didn't care too much about acting. I was just doing it because I felt like it was something that you were supposed to do as a comedian, you know? So in the class, I slacked around a lot. I didn't take it seriously, you know? Like, I got yelled at a few times from my acting coach. And I was joking around. I was fucking around. I wasn't really going hard with it. I wasn't taking it seriously. But what was so crazy was that, you know, I was starting these acting classes and, you know, part of the lessons was how to get an agent. But at the time, I already had an agent and I was already auditioning from, you know, being on BET.
Right. So, right. That's dope, man. You were basically prepared, right?
It was like you had these new acting students trying to figure out how to get an agent. And meanwhile, I'm in the class with them, and I'm already auditioning. Like, the acting coach was telling me, can you bring in some of your sides, you know, so we can study it and see, you know, what kind of roles they're giving you, like, for Law & Order, SVU, and shit like that. So I would bring in my sides, and we would go over the sides. And as I kept auditioning and not booking shit, I was getting more and more frustrated. I was like, why am I not booking anything? Like, I'm getting these dope ass auditions. Getting these dope ass auditions, but I'm not booking shit. And that's what kind of made me respect the craft of acting a little more. Like, I started looking at it differently. I wasn't like, oh, let me just do this just to do it. Like, now I was like, all right, I wanna figure this shit out, and I wanna try to get good at this shit. And I just kept, you know, taking the classes, kept auditioning, you know, and then finally I auditioned for Cop Out, man, and the rest was history.
Let me ask you a question, right? Because you know who you look similar to, right? Like, who you can relate to, right? John Leguizamo, right? Have you walked in or gotten anything because you look like him?
I think that's the reason why I got cop out, because in the movie I was playing the younger brother of the gang leader, who was played by what's his name from Half Faith and Scandal.
Yes.
And Chappelle Show, yeah. Guillermo Diaz. So Guillermo Diaz was the gang leader, and I was like his little brother that was like doing all the dirty work for him. Like if I showed up, somebody was about to die. So I think that's had a lot to do with it. They were trying to find he was the lead villain, and they were trying to find someone who looked similar to him. So I think that's kind of what got me in the door, to be honest.
Yeah, man. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's pretty cool, man. You know, and I know, you know, you've acted in quite a few things. So what I want to ask you, so you on the New York scene, what did you prefer? Did you prefer the comedy clubs or the black circuit? What would you say?
You said, what would I prefer? You went out for a second. What would I prefer? What
would you prefer? Being a New York comic, did you favor the black circuit or the comedy clubs?
Well, you know, I tried to do the clubs in the beginning, and I just, it was a lot of hanging around and not getting on. And I think that's kind of what pushed me towards the rooms, you know, like the bars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And then I saw that in the clubs, you were either performing for free or getting $15, whereas the rooms were paying you $100. Mm-hmm. So between me wanting to get on stage, and I just wanted to go where I was welcomed, and I didn't feel too welcomed at the comedy clubs. There were only a few clubs that I was able to play at the time. One of them was the Comic Strip. Another one was Stand Up New York, New York Comedy Club. I never did the Cellar. I did Gotham a few times. You know, I tried to go wherever I can get in at, but the rooms is where I felt welcome. The rooms is where I felt welcome. I didn't feel like, oh, we already have our token Spanish comic for the evening, so we're good. You know, it wasn't like that. And then once I started getting booked and making $100 a night,
you like, fuck the clubs.
Yeah, I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I still going to these clubs?
Right, and you get, through your connections, you can hit the road, you could go overseas, you know, you could get in here and get in there. So it's
different. I think that's the main reason why there was an urban circuit to begin with, was because comedians who weren't white were going to comedy clubs, and they were dealing with the same shit that I had to deal with, a lot of hanging around and not getting up, and they needed an alternative. So they started hosting these bars, and then next thing you know, a whole circuit pops up off of it.
Right.
So,
Right. And now from what I was told from, you know, Marlon and Kenny Williams and Franz Cassius and Smokey Suarez and guys like that, it was that in the early 2000s, it was popping. Like, in New York, there was rooms everywhere. Mm-hmm. And you guys could, you know, make a killing in one night.
Right.
And just be booked and have, you know, a lot of money in your pocket. And just, you know, live and live comfortably as a stand-up comic, like, which is dope. I wish it was like that now.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's so different now.
Now it's like so I feel like I came in like post-Def Jam, like right after that Def Jam era. And now, you know, we have a whole new circuit, man. We got the alternative circuit now.
Yep, we got the alt circuit. We got the Zooms. We got the Instagram stuff. We got Instagram comedians. We got everything. Podcasting and just different things, man. You know, we got streaming, right? So it's just different.
It is. It is. Social media and digital media changed the game.
Yeah. Yep, I agree. How do you feel about these? Because I don't call them comedians. How do you feel about these funny influencers?
Well, I think, honestly, there's something that we can learn from each other. You know, like, I feel like they can learn from us about the stage all the stage stuff, and we could learn from them about the video stuff. You know, like, yes. I feel like, look, yeah. These motherfuckers, they packing out houses, they getting money, they getting paper. They may not be the funniest on stage, but they doing something right, you know? They doing something right.
Yeah, man, it's true. They definitely are, man. They definitely are. I remember when all of that, like, first started popping and you know, DC Young Fly and, Major Hype. Commodore, who we know.
Right.
We know Commodore. And they was popping and they started getting all these gigs. And I'm having a convo with a friend of mine who's a working comedian. And I'm like, yo, bro, these dudes are taking money off our plate. Like, you don't understand. And he's like, nah, you can't say that to me. And I'm like, yes, I can, bro. Like, yo, I would like, are you getting gigs for $5,000 right now? And he's like, nah. I said, all right then, bro. Like, shut the fuck up. These
Word.
Dudes are making money.
Word.
They're getting deals with All Def Digital. They're on Blackish, you know. They're getting Word. Movies, you know. Look at I Got the Hookup 2. Came out almost 20 years after the original. I Got the Hookup 2 has nothing. Master P booked all Instagram folks for this movie. That says a lot. It says a lot. You got Jess Hilarious doing, you know, All Def Digital. All Def Comedy, I mean, on HBO. Like, that's
yeah.
crazy.
Yeah, It's not about your resume anymore. It's about your followers. It used to be, man, about your resume. Now it's about your followers.
It's the numbers game.
Even now, like, I went down to Atlanta for All-Star Weekend, and I was hollering at the... I was on the phone with the owner of the comedy club, Uptown Comedy Club. Thank you, bro. And the first thing I told him that I want...
My man got it. You heard that, ladies and gentlemen? He got an assist. He said, thank you, bro. What the?
and I hollered at the owner about me doing my roast, because I wanted to do like my real birthday weekend was All-Star Weekend. So, when I was in Atlanta, I was like, I want to do an Atlanta roast. And the first thing that the owner said was, what your followers look like? That's the first thing he said. What your followers look
right.
like. Because that's what it comes down to now. So when I told him... Wow. So long story
that's
short,
crazy,
when I told him 5,000, he said, call me back when you get your weight up.
Yo. Wow. That sounds like a show. Me and I have a show named like that. Me and Rashad have one of our other shows is called Get Your Weight Up Comedy. Yo, that's hilarious, man.
But that's what it comes down to now. But it is relevant. It is relevant. Like, you know, when you think about Instagram and you think about the Instagram comedians and all that, they're showing us how to be directors. That's what they're doing. They're showing us how to be directors. They're showing us... And don't get me wrong, man. There's so much fucking whack-ass sketches that they be posting, and I hate it. And it's just like shit that they just want to like show a big booty model in the video. Any stupid excuse for them to have one of them big booty bitches in the video. But when you sift through it, you know, you do find some good ones. And look, it at the best, it shows you what not to do. You know what I mean? Like, you'll watch it, you'll see what you don't like, you'll see what you do like. It'll inspire you. It'll give you ideas for your own videos and like. You know, we need that. It's an important part of entertainment. Like, you know, we're not only stand-up comedians, but we're writers as well. So eventually, if you want to write a movie, you want to write a TV show, you're going to want to write something for the camera, you know? And that Instagram stuff is basically training us for that.
Yeah, of course. It's good training ground. I mean, but listen, man, you and me, I mean... we only majored in, weren't you a communications major?
Film. Yeah.
Similar. It's still media.
Yeah.
Still entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's still entertainment at the end of the day. So I think you was prepped. We were prepped for that regardless. You know, it's basically an art form, right? Film. I'm a television and radio major, broadcasting and, you know, journalism, that's my background, and you are in film, so it's like you were preparing
yeah exactly
for comedy and for your acting. You just didn't realize it. You probably was like, damn, I did learn something that you went to City College, right?
City College. I studied film at Brooklyn College. Yeah, I studied film at Brooklyn College.
Okay. So wait, so what did you major
music.
In
I was
at
a
City
music
College?
Major.
Oh, you okay.
That's I was playing cool. the
did
keyboard.
You play an instrument?
Yep, I was playing the keyboard. I was learning how to read and write music. I was learning about chords. I was learning about the electronic equipment in the studio. I was learning about all that stuff. If you watch the Coming to the Stage episode, I actually, when they did a little video about me, because, you know, when I made it to the finals, they came to New York, they recorded me in my element. So I brought them to City College. And I was like, this is my campus. I'm a music major right now. You know, I was well into music. And then when I made it to the finals and went on tour, I dropped out of school. I left City College. And I was off touring nationally. And then 10 years later, I returned back to college, Brooklyn College. Yeah.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, I was actually trying to get in there after I graduated from Kingsborough. I'm still going to try. I just can't. I had an interview with them. It didn't go well because the dude was a hater. But you know how college is a business, just like everything mm-hmm. else. So you kind of got to roll with the punches and try again.
When
it gets normal.
Yeah, when you're pursuing an art degree, you know they do have like these little auditions and shit. You know, like they want to see what you're working with when you walk in the door. You know, like. Anytime it's an art degree,
of course.
You don't have to go through some kind of shit like that where they want to see what you got first.
Yeah. I mean, it was more so when I sat down with the guy to get the transfer after getting my associates at LaGuardia, he basically was like, well, you know, you got a grade from when I used to go to CSI, right? I used to go to College of Staten Island straight out of high school. That's where I went. And a freaking old grade came back to haunt me. And I'm like, first of all, my average at LaGuardia was a 3.5, sir. Okay? And I graduated. And I got a paper. So I got my diploma. Like, I need to go get my physical one, actually. It's still sitting in Long Island City. I'm going to call them. Like, yo, give me my shit.
I thought when you go from CUNY to CUNY, it's an automatic transfer.
You understand? That's what I was under the impression. You talking about a grade from like 12 years ago. Like, are you kidding me, bro? Matter of fact, the grade is 16 years old now that I think about it, because I was in CSI in 2005. That was the last time I was there. So how are you going to tell me after I get my damn paper and I get sworn by the freaking president of the school, by New York State law, you now have an associate's degree at the Barclays Center, no less, because that's what my graduation was. And now I'm a communications major with an associate's degree, right? And you're going to tell me I can't come here because of a grade from six? Are you kidding me? So with that, you know, it's also to who you know. So I know I can get around him because I have a professor that I was cool with at Kingsborough that, you know, graduated from there. I'm sure he knows people. You know what I'm saying? And that's how it is. Sometimes it's who you know that even with school, it's who you know. And in life, too, it's the same thing. You know, like I was still able to get work in the radio industry anyway. I've done internet radio. I've worked with Jamie Roberts at Cumulus Media. You know what I'm saying? So I've been in that industry the same way you and I are in comedy. I'm jumping into the world soon. Wait on it.
How long have you been running around now?
Huh?
Yeah.
In comedy?
Okay.
2010.
Okay.
Yeah. I started, I took a class with Linda Smith at Caroline because I didn't know any better. But, you know, shout out to Linda, you know what I'm saying? You know what I mean? Like, and then I found out the bullshit quick. Like, I did two bringers for her and I was like, okay, right? But then I happened to meet Pudge, right? Uh-huh. I happened to meet Pudge Fernandez because I went to an open mic that he had and the rest is history. Like, he was like, yo, if you sell tickets, you know, the money's yours. He sold the tickets wholesale for like, I can't even remember what the price was. And I remember making like $150 off of a show at Times Square Arts Center, which was the old Laugh Factory, right? And I'm just like, yo, I just started. I'm making money? The fuck? like 3 months in, I was making money. It was crazy. And then I met you in like 2012-ish. You were at Uber Lounge. There was when Tino and Willie Sweets had it, because you know Pudge was the original host with Dennis Parafan. And I met you there, and that was like the first time I met you. And I was like, yo, I know this guy. And then, you know, it's crazy. You do comedy with people you watch on TV and films, doing stand-up on television. And it's like, yo, I could call this dude right now, or I could call this lady right now. It's weird. It's still weird to me that we're peers. Like, it's strange.
Right.
Right? I mean, and look at, hey, Saturday night, hey. Your roast. Don't nobody want to talk about it.
About what?
No one's talking about the roast.
Oh, what? Well, I mean, I've seen people posting pictures and shit like that. Well, what you mean about what, like, yes, about what actually took place is what you're saying.
Yes, sir. The video is gone. It magically disappeared. What happened? Did somebody's feelings get hurt? Because I'm okay.
No, look, Justin, you came and you did exactly what the fuck you were supposed to do. I said it was no holds barred. I said it's every man for himself. That's exactly what the fuck you were supposed to do.
Right. And then everything I did after was all shocked. None of that was real. I didn't tell him beforehand because I wanted a real reaction. I jabbed at him. I jabbed at Marshall Brandon while I was on stage on purpose because I know Marshall. I know him. You know what I mean? I know him for years. I've met him at Footprints in 2013, so I know him. You have to come at him.
Right,
he's going to get you regardless. You know what I'm saying? So I was prepared. I don't give a fuck. You know what I mean? So I let it all go. I emptied the clip.
Oh, man.
I was getting on Justin, people that wasn't even
Justin,
there.
No. Like I said, you did exactly what the fuck you were supposed to do. Shots fired. Clap back. We gonna clap back. We gonna clap back.
Clap back. We go. That's exactly what it was. We were just in there, yo. Yo, and if you notice, the only person I left alone was Bob McGee, because I know Bob.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? That's why I said what I said. I said, yo. Bob Affini's in the building, but I ain't fucking with him because he'll kill everybody in here and get on stage and laugh about it. It was fun though, man. It was needed, man. Like, it was good to see everybody. There's people I haven't seen in 2-3 years, or even you. The last time I saw you before, you know, the pandemic was what, 2016 at Mingles? Me, you, Takara, Talent. Who else was on that show? Kelly Kells, Sean Harvey. That's the last time.
That is the last time we were all together. I forgot about that. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. You see what I'm saying? Like, it was a nice spring night. And that was it. Like, so it was good. Even solo. Like, I was used to seeing solo every Wednesday at Essence. But because of the pandemic, it put everything on pause. And it made it, even if you've seen each other in 2019, the way last year went, it was like slow motion. Yep. It felt like a 10-year gap because there was no comedy. Like, it's crazy. So it was like a reunion. You know, your peoples was there, your family was there, friends you grew up with. You got all of the comedy family there, the real comedy family, right? Because they were there. Not to say that the folks that wasn't there aren't our comedy family, but you know who supports you.
Yeah, no, I, you know, like I said, like.
And I'm sure other people couldn't make it for, you know, reasons of, you know, being scared about COVID and this and that, but you know who supports you, and that's good. You know where the love comes from, because it was love.
It was a lot of love. I panicked early because I was like, I was looking at my ticket sales on Eventbrite. I was like, this shit about to be a flop, and you know, little by little, everybody kept trickling in, and it was fucking packed up in there.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it was like, I was in my head like, damn, son, Jamaicans don't give a fuck about COVID, because there was no social, like, they had masks, they had extra masks, they had hand sanitizing stations everywhere, but there was no, like, New York was like, listen, we've been dealing with this for a year, fuck the 6 feet, okay? If he dies, he dies, like Rocky four style. You know? So it was cool, man. I had fun. I thought it was great.
Yeah, it was a night of classic comedy, man.
It was dope, man. You know, and, you know, Solo kicked it off, man, because Solo was golden. And I was like, and Marshall was like, yo, you want to go? I said, nah, man, I'm waiting for Smokey, man, because I want to do my impression. And then Smokey didn't even show up.
I know.
And then Imagine snuck in. I would have had something for Imagine, like, too. But
you were like, you know what I'm saying? Shit, when Smokey don't even show up.
Yo, crazy. And then everybody got quiet when I was like, yo, don't he cancel every show? He'll tell you, he's going, yo, I'm going to be there. Yo, I'm going to be there. And he does not. He'll be in fucking Detroit doing another show. Yo,
tell us, Smokey, you got $100 for him. It's like saying, yo, can you come through for free? He don't give a fuck.
Yep. It's about the dollar. Ain't nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that.
$100 is like you asking him to come through for free.
Yeah, like, you gotta get something, bro. Like, what's up? You know? And Smokey would be like, yo, I say yes to everything, but if somebody gives me something better, I'm going to fuck over there. Because they got a couple of more dollars.
Because they got a couple of more dollars.
Yo, so, yo, before we wrap up, bro. You hear the news?
What happened
today? In our world, did you hear that motherfuckers canceled?
Yo, I did hear about that.
Isn't that crazy? Like, how do you cancel Barry Ribs?
What did that have to do with Smokey's post or what?
I mean, he alluded to some comic, right, saying some racist stuff about black comedians, you know, being thugs and criminals, and if it wasn't for stand-up comedy, they'd all be in jail. I'm like, what? I mean, I don't know. You know, I wasn't there. I wasn't a fly on the wall, you know what I'm saying? Only Smokey knows in that person. So, apparently, it the post came out early yesterday, because I go to the gym early, right? I seen that shit at, like, 9 in the morning. And I'm like, yo. And then my phone just starts going zzz, zzz. I'm getting phone calls from people from out of town, across West Coast, you know, everywhere. Everybody's calling me all day, texting me like, yo, did you see? And then somebody made like a GIF, and it's got Barry's face with the red canceled over it. I'm like, damn, the black delegation has spoken. We have traded. They're like, yo, we have traded Barry Ribs for A.G. White is in the Hall of Fame of Black Comics. You know what? He's light-skinned now. A.G., congratulations. You're one of us.
Well,
it's crazy.
Before I say anything, what are your thoughts?
Listen, bro. I've seen Barry do stuff for years and wonder how his whole act, I wonder how he fucked up. Honestly. Because of his delivery, right? If you know Barry, right? His delivery is like as such, right? And you're gonna laugh again, because yes, I can do his voice. I'm like, yeah, I'd like to come back. If I were reincarnated, I'd wanna come back with black skin. And you hear the pause, right? And the whole crowd's like, what did he just say? Because black skin lasts a long time. I'm 35 years old. Like, no, you can't do shit like that. Come on, bro. You're dissing us, and you don't think we know. You know what I'm saying? Like, A.G. White is different. You know what I'm saying? I've never felt anything about A.G. White being racist ever, and it's not because I grew up four blocks away from him in East New York, and he still lives here to this day. That might be part of it, but I've never heard him ever disrespect the black culture, because he's a part of it. He grew up, he's the last
Honestly, he's the last white boy, right?
And his brother, they're the last Jewish fuck family. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's crazy to me that Barry would do that after we embraced you for all these years, bro. The black comedy world fed you. That's crazy to me. For me, it's nuts. And I know motherfuckers is looking for him. You know what I'm saying? Like, what's he gonna do? Outrun somebody at his age? Nigga's 85 going on 175, right? Like, where's, you know? It's crazy, man. He gonna have to make a statement, man. I help him write it. Yeah, I would like
to the black community.
To the black community of comedy in New York and Chicago, LA, and excuse me, Mr. Rich talking here. Like, what? Come on, bro. You got to say something.
Well, you know, Barry's from the old Canarsie. Do you know anything about the old Canarsie?
I've heard stories from my mom and my grandparents and aunts and uncles, yes, but I don't know.
Well, I didn't live it either, but I've heard stories as well. And from what I've heard, my uncle would get chased from the movie theater on Avenue L. That was right there. Would try to go see it. It was just like, I go down to the movie and they tell me, don't come around here. It was like that. My uncle would come from Brookline, go to the movie theater, and get chased from the Italians back to the projects.
You mentioned Brookline. You remember Frank's Spike Shop?
How about Pito's Tire Shop? Man. Pito's. You remember Pito's? Pito's Tire Shop? That's the old Canarsie. When I was in elementary school, I went to PS 114 on Glenwood and Remsen, and all of my classmates were Jewish or Italian. Jewish or Italian. By the time I reached Canarsie High School, all of my classmates were Jamaican and Haitian.
Oh, you went to... No.
I was supposed to graduate in 99. I got left back. Did my fifth year of high school at a school in Orlando, Florida. My mother kicked me out. She sent me to live with my aunt in Orlando, and I did my fifth year of high school in Orlando. Took it to now.
Okay. Yeah, my mom was in Dewey, and she went to school with... She was supposed to graduate with Spike Lee, and then she ended up having to, like, do math over. So she graduated from Canarsie. But she was in Dewey first with Spike Lee. Shit. That's crazy to me, because that's one of my idols.
Nuts. that's the history. That's the history of the neighborhood, is that. You know, that's the funny thing about Canarsie is that, like, while every place else is going from hood to good, Canarsie is doing the reverse. Canarsie, you know, so look, you see the hood started black and now it's going white, right? Canarsie started white and going black.
Yes.
It's the opposite.
Yeah, man. It's true. It's very true. So what do you have coming up? Like, what are your plans since you're home, man?
I'm going back to LA in August. I want to eventually be in LA, man. Like, I just came here because, like I said, I was paying expensive ass rent in LA, and there wasn't no shows, there wasn't no comedy clubs, there wasn't no auditions. I was like, let me get my fucking ass out of here. But I eventually want to go back there, man. I fucks with LA. Have you been out there?
I'm planning on coming. I've been hounded by many of our peers to get my ass out there. I believe this year will be the year, especially since I'm doing the Chocolate Sundays virtually in about 3 weeks with Takara.
Nice.
So Takara Williams. So I plan on coming out there for sure. Like, I know this is a competition. I know how this shit goes. My goal is to do well in front of her and whoever else is watching. I don't care about winning. I just want that. So what's going on?
You doing a competition with Takara? She hosting it.
Yeah. Well, so because LA is closed and Laugh Factory is still closed. Chocolate Sundays is on a Wednesday now, and they're doing
Chocolate
it virtually.
Sundays is on a Wednesday. Yeah.
So they have submissions.
They're gonna
February.
Call it Chocolate Wednesdays.
Yeah,
they call it Chocolate Wednesdays.
Yeah, basically it's Chocolate Wednesdays, but you know, it's still right, spelled like right. The ice cream dessert, right? So, it should be Chocolate Wednesday, but but yeah, they have submissions in February, and I applied the same night that I got the info from my boy Kevin Mason, who did it. He did it in person though. A couple years back, like I think 2019, he went out there and did it because he got on through Franz Cassius. And you know, Franz, when I told him about it, he was like, yeah, you could have been out here, nigga. I've been out here for 7 years. Yeah. He got, like, he congratulated me, but he was like, yo, you could have been did that shit. I told you, nigga, come out here.
Well, look, in the 90s, in the 2000s, whatever, before social and digital media, it meant something to go to LA. Now, not so much. Now, not so much, because everybody's watching each other on the phone, on the computer. Like, you don't need to be in a specific location anymore to make it. You could do just fine off of your YouTube channel. You know what I'm saying? But if the opportunity presents itself, fuck it. Make your way out there. Make your way out there. Shake a few hands. Rub a few elbows. You know, do that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, it's like, you know, I have certain goals, you know. I feel without, I mean, okay, I've performed everywhere except for the Cellar, Stand Up New York, Brokerage, and what's the other one
right.
That they own? Governors, right? So everywhere else I've played. So, you know what I mean? Like, I'm past at Broadway, Greenwich, and Caroline's, right? And that's because I produced for them, right? So, and when Ha was a thing, I know Ha is now Yonkers up in Ridge Hill. I was past there. I think I'm technically still past there because they didn't tell me I wasn't, right? So I think, you know, I haven't done everything I need to do in New York, but I know that I've been doing it for 10 years, you know? I've done Wendy Williams. I've done, you know, Ray has Laughaholics on Brick TV. And that's really, it's a good thing because that show is produced by Verizon.
That spot is, you know, from what? One more time?
Laughaholics.
Yeah.
Right? Ray DeJean's Laughaholics Live, even though it's on Brick TV,
uh-huh.
The Brooklyn Public Access, because Verizon picked it up, it's seen around the entire borough, like the it's all the five boroughs, so everyone can see it, and it's on YouTube. So, you know, I've done all that. I've done radio out here, which I would like to continue to do radio out here, but as we know, a lot of these radio cats, they're gonna die before they give up their slot. So it, you know, you gotta move on. You gotta move on and get your name out. I've done, you know, I played Virginia a lot, Philadelphia. I've been to Boston. But it's time to expand, go to Atlanta. That's my goal this year, go to Atlanta. But as far as LA, I have a list. And, you know, Chocolate Sundays was on that list. The Comedy Store is on the list. The Improv is on that list out there because I know that based off the documentary, right, about the Improv, I know that they directly moved from New York to LA. So that's the Improv I want. Just to have it on my resume. I've done the Tampa one, but that doesn't count to me. So these are like different goals I have. Like, all right, I got Chocolate Sundays. Cool. Boom. Put that on a resi. Then I want to do the Comedy Store. Then I want to do, you know, the Improv and whatever else I can touch while I'm out there. So even for Atlanta, I want to go to Uptown Comedy Theater. Absolutely. Absolutely. I want to write my name on that wall. Hell yeah. So it's just, you know, different things. And still I'm going to do the bar shows and on the Black Circuit because I personally love the Black Circuit more than anything else. It, you know, it might be because I'm Afro-Latino, but so what? If I want to perform for my people and get paid well, absolutely. But I will have my foot at the clubs like I do here in New York now. and have the other foot in the Chitlin circuit or whatever you want to call it, the Latino circuit, the Asian circuit, the alt, whatever. You know, I know a lot of people. A lot of people know me, so I think I can make it work. You know what I'm saying?
All you look, the power is what? Within you. You don't need anyone else. You know what you need? You know what you need? You need a pen and a motherfucking pad and just go to work, bro. Just go to work. You grab the pen,
yes, sir.
You grab the pad, and you go to work, sir. And you write, and you keep writing, and you keep writing, and you keep writing. Some of it is gonna be good, some of it is gonna be bad, but just keep fucking writing and keep creating. Keep writing and keep creating, and you're gonna find your way, my brother. You're gonna find your way.
Yes, sir, man. I ain't going nowhere, as you saw.
You ain't going nowhere. You ain't going nowhere. You ain't going nowhere.
No, sir. I'm here to stay. But yo, this was great, man. We're gonna have to do a part two because you and I could go for like ever. Is that the chemistry is good, man? So
I mean, look. But, you know East quick, New York is right next door to Canarsie, huh? Man. That's all I gotta say.
We neighbors. We basically family, and we both Puerto Rican. So anyway, we might be cousins. We should do that ancestry. Like, oh shit, he's my cousin. You never know. Do you think you would start?
Yeah, I was telling Richard about that. He says he want to do a Thursday, so I was talking about that with him. Once a month. I don't want to do a weekly, but I'll do it once a month.
Okay. Well, I'll be there.
It's a dope setup, right? It's a dope. Ain't it a dope setup?
Yeah, man. I've been there before a couple years ago. They had comedy, and I just like it. I like the venue. I like the wings. I like the drinks. I like the setup.
You got the bar in the back. You got the VIP comedy section in the corner. And then you got the stage.
Yeah, exactly. And they got the stage. Yeah, man. Yeah. I was the one that turned the lights out, you know, because everybody's like, I guess they thought I worked there. I'm like, why the fuck? Y'all keep coming to me. So I had to ask the bartender. I was like, yo, where's the dimmer? She was like, yo, he's the one that knew all. I'm like, there's five of them. He's one of them. I'm like, okay, whatever. She was nice, though. But she had her moments.
The one on the wall.
But tell people where
the one on the
you.
Wall.
Huh? Say that again. The one, which one? The circular one. You're like, okay. The round one. Round face, okay. Whatever you said. No. The flat one, the one that got. tell people when they.
Hey
can man, find
you, man, hit me media. Up on Instagram, Corey fucking Fernandez. No E in Corey, no G in fucking.
He's everywhere, people. If he's on this podcast, trust me, we're gonna be doing a lot.
Hey, I'm here, Justin. I'm here, man. Whatever you know about, let me know about it.
I know. Listen, we gonna work. Trust me, we gonna work. Yes, we definitely gonna work. I'm happy you back. That's why I'm asking. You really want to leave? But we'll talk about that at another time. So, yo, thank you guys.
How many listeners we got?
Another episode. What's up? I don't know yet. I gotta upload it. We'll find out. Cause I'm gonna share this shit like a motherfucker. Okay. So yeah. So shout out to everybody for listening to Just Kid from Brooklyn. You know, East New York in the building. We got the Canarsie connection. Yo. So keep supporting this show. It's everywhere. It's powered by Anchor, but it's also on Apple, Google, Spotify,
from Brooklyn.
And everywhere in between. Peace
Just
out.
Just a kid from Brooklyn.
You ain't never there. Yes, sir.